What's going on, y'all? You are listening to or watching the Chain Reaction Podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I am your host, Jeremiah Mitchell, joined by Mr. Jeremiah Harding. How are you, sir?
I'm reasonable today. I just had the first half of breakfast, so... anyway, how you doing?
Late day, huh? Or just a late breakfast? Yeah.
Well, late breakfast. I had a little like smoothie-ish thing earlier, but I don't know, it's more of a snack with my intake. So, but yeah, how you doing?
I'm very unreasonable today. Yeah. Well, we covered diet. How's the weather? Just so we get that out of the way.
Fucking hot. It's never pleasant. Like until it's pleasant here because it's the desert and it's like a dry heat desert. And so everything, it's either summer and very fucking hot or winter and very fucking cold. And for me, because of my metabolism, it's always the very fucking cold that's at least, you know, moderately comfortable. I think it's like, you know, 97 or 8 or something right now.
Yeah, that's too hot. I think it's in the 30s today. It was below freezing last night.
I envy that.
Unpleasant. It's also wet. I was doing some stuff outside, hauling garbage around in a rental property, just getting soaked in a sweatshirt. I was not prepared for winter in October. Not quite winter weather, but still, when it's freezing and you're getting rained on, it's like exactly the freezing temperature.
Yeah,
this is the first time I've been cold, really cold in a while. Anyway,
reminds you of the good old days, huh?
The good last winter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no episode last week, in case you noticed. I decided I'm just not, if Harding can't make it, I'm just not going to record anything on my own from now on. Just because it's easier not to. Yeah.
To explain why I wasn't there, I'm saving up for a move east, like the opposite coast, and I'm taking any work that comes my way, and basically work came my way, and it took both that Sunday and that Monday. So apologies to the audience who was expecting one, but that's the reason it didn't end up happening.
Yeah, that happens. Understandable. Hopefully you can save up quickly and get out there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, because then we might be able to do an episode together, like in the same room, which would be interesting.
No, I'm not on the East Coast, man.
Well, yes, but I'd be closer to you. I mean, which is okay. Closer to you, California or New Jersey? I'm curious.
New Jersey is.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I would think, yeah, Northern California is still pretty far away, but New Jersey is really far away. It's probably a 20-hour drive or 24-hour drive.
Yeah.
I would guess. And I think LA is like 36. I have a friend that did that without sleeping by himself, which seems kind of stupid. One of the places where I'm best at sleeping is in the car while driving.
Yeah.
Especially when I first started driving in high school, multiple times I was almost ended up in the ditch driving at 2 a.m. It's like, oh, it's just so chill. You know, it just rocks you, vibrates you to sleep like you're a baby in a chair or something. But also,
and then, of course, you get that shock awake when the thing suddenly dips into a ravine.
The one I remember most is the shock awake is, I think it was 3 a.m. I was like halfway through with a 4-hour drive, and I woke up going 85 in between two lanes on the highway with a semi horn blaring behind me. So I'm glad. I think I fell asleep while passing the semi. So it might have had a little bit to do with my lack of sleep at that period of time in my life as well. But yeah, that was probably the closest. I mean, easily could have died there. And worse, I could have killed someone else potentially, running him off.
Yeah, Looks like you could have used some of these.
You know what the solution is for me now? Well, I can't do it anymore because now my wife and I both drive the same vehicle. But when I was older, I realized as long as you smoke, you stay awake, or I stay awake at least. It like changes the your brain pattern, so you're engaged in another activity. So I could stay awake.
So I'm curious, smoking what?
Just cigarettes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, and now of course, like the only way I'll do that to get like a really solid head change is vaping. Like, and I barely ever do that.
Yeah, I just mean like the doing an extra activity along with it helps keep you awake. Looking at my phone helps keep me awake then, but I came from an era where you didn't have phones that had access to the internet. Just the corpus phones.
Well, and at this point, like whenever I drive, whenever I need to drive a long distance, it's always heavy metal. That's what keeps me awake. Yeah. I just turn on like a really angry, aggressive album, and I'll put that on repeat and fucking floor it and avoid cops.
Yeah, music doesn't do it for me. It doesn't help keep me awake, no matter what it is. Even if I'm like singing it, all of a sudden I'll be stopped and sleeping. But that's not an issue for me anymore. You don't have to worry about. I don't need any tips. Just used to be, and I still want to sleep while driving, late at night or anytime it's dark, really. So, Jeremiah, we were talking a little bit before the show, and are you wanting to say that you think Trump is pretty smart? Or yes, what do you want to say around the stupidity of Trump?
Of course he's smart. Of course, like, that's one of the best ways to distract people from how many things you're doing wrong is to make it seem like anything you do wrong is an accident. Obviously, he's not stupid. As far as I can tell, that'd just be an increasement to the conspiracy, is that people would assume that all of his actions are because he's stupid, and that therefore he could get away with a shit ton of manipulation that requires a high IQ or whatever. Like, it doesn't seem to me like it's possible that he's stupid, especially since everything he's doing directly enriches himself and the corporations that are growing while he's in there and will be bigger once he's out. So,
do you think he's deliberately plays somewhat stupid?
Sometimes.
Okay.
I think he's playing. Well, okay. So, recently, the greatest memory of all time meme, or whatever, the fact that he's constantly, quote, blundering, and people focus on that rather than the fact that he's increasing his power. You know, the whole notion of the Las Vegas attacks having been the result of Democrat or Republican policies requires a certain amount of fake stupidity to pull off, because like he's benefiting directly. The person who he kissed up to during the debates runs the security company that runs the that sells the porno scanners that they put in airports. And, you know, suddenly after Las Vegas, there's going to be a whole lot of those in hotel lobbies. I wonder why.
It'll be interesting to see if that actually pans out.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, you know, it's really easy to watch this hand and not the other when this hand is so obvious and entertaining. And I think he's trying to entertain people rather than, you know, let them dig into the facts. And if you're going against the president, it's going to seem like you have some sort of rebellion, some sort of resistance, whatever. But you might not. You might be going directly into what he's saying, what he wants. And I can't see any way around that. I mean, what? We just have, like, the world's stupidest president? Nah. Come on.
Well, I think we might, but I agree with you that it's a distraction. I think we are both on the same page there, that this focus on how dumb Trump is and hypocritical, which is a part of, I think, the idiocy that he says different things all the time, as if that's not just a common political maneuver. But it definitely takes the focus off of the important things, that is, that policies that he continues, and even he's even, it's not that surprising, but it's disappointing that he's way worse than Obama when it comes to bombing the Middle East. You know, but even the Democrats can't do that. They can't focus on that particular aspect of his policy, because that would be an indirect indictment upon Obama and Hillary Clinton, really, as Secretary of State, with the stuff that she did.
No fly zones.
Yeah, yep. I do tend to believe some of the reports that come out from the White House, like, you can't give Trump a 6-page paper because he won't read it, and that he's not really into reading. He spends a lot of time every day just watching television shows. I do tend to think, I don't think about him as, like, overall just a really dumb person, but he seems to rely a lot more on instinct than information. And people talk about saying that really the last person who talks to him is often the person that he agrees with, because what they say is reasonable, and he doesn't necessarily think for himself that much. And I do think that he lacks knowledge, like a political type knowledge, if that makes sense. He didn't know as much as Hillary Clinton knew about various political issues. He didn't know even close to what she knew, and she's not even that great of a politician in terms of her understanding and ability to explain things. She's a great politician in terms of her ability to acquire power by knowing the right people, but she's no expert on anything, nor even that articulate.
Well, I mean, because here's the thing, though. If you get, like, all the information you need, because your goals aren't to, like, govern a nation fairly and justly and whatever, even if that's not possible because, you know, we're anarchists. If your goal isn't to govern a nation fairly and equitably, if your goal is to generate profit, maybe he doesn't need to look like he's very good at the rest of it, because that's not what he's aiming at.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of areas where he doesn't care that much. And in those areas, he's kind of dumb. And I don't think he's that aware of how he comes across based upon the things that he says. I might be wrong, but there's just so many absurd tweets. And you have things like him, like, what was the one clip I saw recently? Someone's like, some people have accused you of not being very humble. He's like, you'd be surprised how humble I am. Just this really arrogant statement to prove his own humility. And he does look like he's actually not necessarily hurt, but a little indignant that people might say something bad about him, that he comes across as not being a humble individual, which is somewhat hilarious. Because
I mean, maybe a little, though, but, like, here's the deal. And like, this isn't an indictment of you, because I don't know, like, many of these either. What executive orders has he signed? What did they do? What bills have gone through while he's been in office? What scandals and corruption have befallen the notoriously scandal and corruption ridden intelligence field? Like, if we're talking seriously, all of these things, you know, his tweets, his quote humble lack of humility, his dumb statements that make him seem stupid or liar or etc., etc. I mean, those are the news now. Those are the news, and the other stuff isn't, and most people don't know what's going on. And if that's not the best way to run a corrupt empire, I don't know what is.
Maybe he's that far thinking. Maybe he's really, really good at just saying distracting things to keep
people
on track.
Or maybe
as
a focus group.
Yeah. That could be. I'm just, I tend to think it's a somewhat of a happy coincidence for him. One, that he happens to be the type of person that likes making somewhat audacious statements like that, and resharing weird things that to most people don't seem befitting of a president. Like, he's not treating the office with its, you know, proper dignity, and I think that the more clownish the better. It's it's evil, so if I can giggle at it, at least that's something. Somewhat, it makes it somewhat entertaining. But I just doubt that this is him outthinking his opponents and outthinking the media to distract people from these other issues, because people aren't generally interested in these other issues. I think it more has to do with the culture that has been shaped, partially by the state and partially just by the way people are and what people tend toward, where the things that are deemed to be the biggest deal and the most inappropriate and the most shocking and newsworthy are things like saying the wrong words or not treating people with the proper respect, or even not condemning white nationalism adequately. These are the kinds of things that people deem newsworthy, and not the other kinds of things.
Well, okay, but I mean, even within that envelope, what was the sort of mirror hashtag to the resistance for the past like 4 years before Trump was in office?
I don't know.
I would argue that it was something like Benghazi or something like that. And 4 years before that, all it needed to do was the birtherism movement, ironically also spearheaded by Trump. And the hashtag politics that we have these days is all about creating controllable opposition, in my view. So we've got, Obama was never stopped by any of this hashtag activism. He was never stopped. He could still bomb those foreign nations. He got away with being the first president to publicly assassinate an American citizen without due process. He got away with all of this grotesque expansion of the U.S. spying program through the NSA and CIA and its connection to the programs with the GCHQ, etc., blah, blah. And he got away with dumping huge amounts of U.S. military industrial complex waste in China. And nobody stopped him, because every bit of the so-called resistance at the time was devoted to one thing or another that the media handed to them.
Yeah, and in a very superficial way as well.
Right.
I think was right, what absolutely. You're saying. Like, people are, they're much more likely to reshare a headline than even read an article.
Right. And so, like, if you can keep that up, it's not necessarily about, keeping people from those stories. It's about making sure that they don't divert from the same news cycle that they've always followed. Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, they're still the biggest. They're still the biggest. And Trump goes on Fox News regularly, and it's somewhat of a joke. Even though Obama could go on the fucking View, and it wasn't considered laughable at all by his side. So we're talking about people who are fundamentally easy to distract.
Yeah.
And so if you can make them the stupid ones by claiming that this other person is stupid when he's really not, I don't see what the downside is for the deep state, etc. I mean, Trump gets to be a puppet. He gets to act like he's the stupid one, and he gets to have eased tax burdens on his corporations. He gets to pay off all the people that got him into office in the first place, especially the people who run the porno scanner company. I forget what it was called, but I'm just going to call it that because it's amusing to say.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. If it ends up happening that they put those scanners in. Also, I'm getting feedback. I think it's from your Skype. I don't know if you can do anything about that. But if they actually end up putting those in the casinos and you see an article, be sure to bring it up or send it my way. Because I've heard that, and that's reasonable and be pretty fascinating if that's actually what ended up happening. I've got a cat that's trying to break down my door right now. So I don't know if you can hear meowing or things clanking in the background, but that's what's going on. Yeah, I think we're largely agreed. I don't know if there's that much of a disagreement. Maybe it's that, because I don't think Trump is dumb, and I'm not sure how to put it in words. He's not. Maybe it's that he's not an intellectual, and that's just painfully obvious. You know, I know George Bush didn't really seem like an intellectual either, but I think he actually was.
Oh, George Bush was smart.
Yeah, he read a lot of books, and there's a lot of stories of him changing the way that he talked around different people as a way of I don't know if it's manipulating them. I would guess it's manipulating them, but that he could actually talk in much more articulate ways than he did while running for office, giving speeches. It just makes him seem like less of a and your everyday Joe. Yeah, if you screw up words sometimes and you talk using simpler sentences and simpler language, it helps people feel connected to you, I think.
Right.
Like Trump kind of showed that, at least a good chunk of the population. But I know Bush is reported to have read books all the time and things like that, whereas I don't think Trump's an into, like, I don't, when people say Trump doesn't read, that's exactly the way he comes across to me. Now, he might just be a really great actor, but I'm guessing he's just not really a reader. And he's found a way to take his personality and his desires and his lack of interest in certain things and his instincts and make it work for him quite well. Well, which is sad for us.
Because, I mean, you know, if he doesn't read books, but he reads enough articles to stay apprised, or enough blog posts, enough philosophy lectures, or whatever, if he puts an audiobook in his ears, I don't see a remarkable difference. And so, you know, maybe he doesn't read, and that's part of the persona, but maybe he reads. But, you know, I mean, even past that, there was this huge controversy about him having Hitler's speeches near his bed. And in this controversy was like, well, I didn't read Hitler's speeches, you know. But if he read Hitler's speeches, then that's the problem, right? So whether he reads or whether he doesn't read, people are still going to be against him. And so I think that's part of like the testing grounds. Like, can we keep people distracted no matter which way we lead them?
Yeah. Yeah. Even bringing up fake stories gets people in a tizzy and prevents the real substantive issues from entering onto you, the scene.
Right.
You know, and there's so many of them too. I think that's part of the problem as well. Like we could spend, you know, hours and hours and hours talking about just one single big issue, and we could do that with 100 things. So it gets to be overwhelming for anyone. It's nice that we at least have a lot of individuals, some who have a base knowledge of all the issues and some who are just, you know, really delving into things like Guantanamo Bay torture, for instance, and the many people
Amnesty
detained there who are not a part of, who were not really guilty of anything or linked with Al-Qaeda even. Their neighbor
Amnesty is
like
great.
On that issue? Are you
Amnesty.
Saying, or just in general, Amnesty is great.
Amnesty International.
Yeah, you're saying they're just great on like...
Well, on torture,
on
human rights issues.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you should look into their white papers. They pretty much, we wouldn't be talking about Guantanamo right now if it weren't for them. They have gone in and exposed so many human rights abuses.
Well, that's good.
Like, if I wasn't donating to Mises Institute every time I donated to, or every time I bought a Humble Bundle, I would be donating to Amnesty. Once I start making a decent amount of money, they're one of the places where I'll tax dodge.
Nice. Yeah, I'm a little hesitant. I don't know enough about them. I basically take your word for it, because you're more of a conspiracist than I am. Not a criticism, by the way. And all these big charities and these big human rights watching organizations are often used as tools of the state in various ways, and are often funded directly or indirectly by state actors or the military industrial complex. And in some cases, these human rights allegations, I'm not saying Amnesty is a part of it, but we did an episode where we talked a lot about the white helmets, and that's one example of an organization like that. But in a lot of cases, these reports of human rights abuses are used as justifications for foreign state invasion of another country or some sort of bombing of a nation. The most recent is the two in the last few years chemical weapons attacks that were blamed on Assad that were no evidence really points to Assad doing it at all. And all of the supposed evidence is just absolute junk. But you make the narrative such, like you're saying, you report it enough, you say it over and over and over again, you get a few organizations that sound like they are legitimate, whether they're intelligence organizations or some sort of indirectly state-sponsored human rights organization that makes the claim that it was Assad, and then you can justify all sorts of things, really.
Right. You started to say the name. I think Human Rights Watch, if I remember correctly, is a UN organization, and fuck the UN. But Amnesty International, one of the reasons I doubt that at least they're 100% corrupt is because, right now I'm looking at their website. Ides of the World on Turkey, a show trial of human rights activists begins. Russia, prisoner transport conditions evoke Gulag era legacy. Irish national Ibrahim Halawa released after 4 years unlawfully detained in an Egyptian prison. Tanzania, activists in prison without charge and LGBTI crackdown must be released. Iraq, fresh evidence that tens of thousands forced to flee Tuzkurmatu amid indiscriminate attacks, looting, and arson. So the fact that they cover so much ground in so many different territories to me, and the fact that they've done huge exposés on U.S. human rights abuses and are one of the reasons prisoner conditions in Guantanamo have improved, it sort of discourages me from believing that they're at least 100% corrupt, for instance, the U.S. government is. But, I definitely, it doesn't remove my cynicism, and it doesn't make me any less pessimistic. It just means that, the fact that they're willing to go where they're willing to go, and the fact that, the fact that their activists are all willing to put their names next to their their job titles on their social media, the fact that I don't see very much hiding, that's sort of what changes it a little bit for me. And I've never really heard of a major act of corruption that the Amnesty International's been a part of.
Gotcha. And none of the, I don't think any of these organizations are completely tools of a foreign government. There's all a bunch of individual actors in them, and many of them sign up to be a part of these organizations out of a desire to do good in the world. And that's true of charities, but that's even true of things like the CIA. You get a bunch of people that are completely duped by various forms of cultural and state propaganda, and they think joining the CIA is a great way to bring good into the world. And we do have instances where individual actors within these organizations might leak something out or might have private conversations where they're like, yeah, this is what's actually true about that situation. You know, you hear people like, I think Eric Margolis is one where he used to be in the CIA and still has connections out with people in the CIA and gets his information that he reports on various things happening in the world from people who want to, the truth to be out there, who are acting within, you know, a particular context. So, like, nothing's really, well, I wouldn't say nothing, but a lot of these things aren't completely corrupt. And I feel kind of like you saying this, but if you're a state that wants to use a human rights organization to justify an invasion of a foreign nation, then you want that organization to mostly do good and mostly report the truth, and then they will seem to be more credible when they lie on your behalf so you can justify your actions.
Yeah, definitely. And if I ever hear anything like that about Amnesty International, I'll see if I can write an article about it ASAP. Because, you know, at least the fact that I have the audience I do means that I can get the word out to certain people that might be able to spread it further.
Yeah.
You know, but that's pretty much all you can do. I mean, Human Rights Watch, I believe firmly, is pretty much a UN plant. You know, and they're very untrustworthy in my experience. You know, sort of like the fact that, oh, and by the way, I bit my tongue really hard the other night and I woke up by doing that. So that's the reason my voice sounds all fucking odd right now. But if, you know, what I think I was saying is essentially that like for now, these are the organizations that seem to be doing the best. And so if they ever do get caught in a lie, that means that the rest of it is still actionable. Sort of like, you know, we can have a relatively high level of assurance that PRISM isn't a fake program. You know, even though it came from the NSA, it came from the NSA from an internal leak. You know, but it still could be fake. The whole thing could be fake. Snowden could be a media circus that they planned to have so that we wouldn't focus on what they could do. I mean, realistically, this is all possible, but yeah,
I sort of look at what's most likely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, cause Cato Institute, the libertarian think tank, they're affiliated with the Bilderberg group. So there's only so much you can do.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to transition us, if that's okay, to kind of a different... Yeah. So let me just give you a scenario and see what you think about it. Let's say that I tell someone to go punch you in the face. Am I guilty of aggression? And if so, why?
Are you paying them to do it? Was there an incentive?
Well, asking if there's an incentive is a little different. Maybe they just want to do the things that I tell them. You know, maybe that's an incentive. Let's say I'm not paying them in this instance.
Okay, well, if they want to do what you tell them to do, then I would say that's an extension of your aggression. Yes, because if I sick a dog on somebody, it's my responsibility that the dog is acting in that way. And humans are just another animal, so I don't see a remarkable difference between doing that and sicking a dog on somebody.
So what sort of force would be justified against me as someone who commanded someone else to punch you, but who didn't lay a finger on you?
You know, to me, I don't think it's my choice to determine for other people, but to me, once I had disabled that person, I would probably seek compensation from you in some way, and if you wouldn't provide that, then I would physically attack you.
Okay. So can you explain more how that's an extension of aggression? How just using words is it? No, let me take it a different way. You said that humans are basically like animals, which is true, but also aren't individual humans are responsible for their own choices regardless of the reasons they chose them? Like why would I be responsible for the actions that another person chose to do to you?
Well, first off, if a human has ceded their individuality to another human being and that other human being has consented to that cession of individuality, meaning like if they have said, I will act on your behalf, and you have told them to act on your behalf, then I would argue that they're no longer an individual, but they're acting as a member of a group. And attacking a member of that group, which has consented to be a member of that group, not in a collectivist sense, but in a very strictly individualist, contractually based sense, that would turn it into an attack on the mechanics which make the group work. It's sort of like attacking a gang leader, for instance, can oftentimes get the entire gang to dissolve because the mythos of that gang leader's invulnerability is gone.
Is that true?
A lot of the time, yeah.
I hadn't thought that or heard that.
Well, yeah. It's because humans are very tribalistic pack sort of animals, and when they have a leader, they want to believe that they're picking that leader because that leader can lead them to victory every time. And if the leader starts to not lead them to victory, or if the leader is incapacitated to the point where they cannot lead them to victory, then the entire mythos is gone. The group bravado that's built around the central idea of that person is gone. It's why decentralized structures often survive better than centralized structures, or at least with less strife during transition periods.
For the listener, just I'm interested in this conversation, just so you know where I'm coming from, because I'm just trying to clarify my own thinking on it a bit. It is an area that it's more murky, at least, than me going up to someone and punching them in the face. Giving an order, I think, is a little bit, there's just more distance from them, and it does become a little more ethically complicated. And I don't think that I have a great way of expressing it. I just some feedback. I don't think it's true, or at the very least, I don't like the phrasing that the individual is no longer an individual when they choose to be.
Well, they're not a part of the group as an individual.
Well, who's acting then? Aren't they?
Well,
aren't they still?
Aren't
they still acting as an individual? Yeah.
Let me ask you something. So, let's say you're on a battlefield, right? And you're taking fire, and you can't tell where the fire is coming from. And you get into a position. You start running. You get to a nice foothold, a nice cover position, and you get to that position, and you look around. And you're slightly forward of the rest of your unit, let's say, and you see somebody ahead of you, where the fire was coming from, that's dressed in camo and has a gun. Would it be ethical to shoot them? I argue that it would be ethical because they look like an enemy combatant and because they're operating as an enemy combatant. It's less that they're no longer an individual and more that they're not acting as an individual but part of a uniform group. And, you know, I see no real difference between that and, like, ceding your loyalty to somebody who tells you to go deck somebody or, you know, to go shoot somebody if you're in a gang or something like that. I don't see any difference there.
Yeah, I guess I would phrase it like they're not. The reason it's justified is not because they're an individual acting as a group, in my mind, but because they're an individual who is acting in such a way that they pose a very reasonable threat to your well-being. The way their choices and their behavior makes them.
That means that you can attack them.
Yeah, yeah. That's what. Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I would say it's justified.
But I could argue that they've ceded their individuality to that group by not, you know, attacking you for reasons that they care about, but for reasons that their leader cares about, and that attacking their leader would then be justified because he's part of the group that attacked you.
Well, it is for reasons they care about, because they care about doing what their leader says.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're starting to cut out a little bit. I hope it clears up. But I would say I don't think a person can cede their individuality. Honestly, I don't think that's possible. Because they remain in charge of their own or responsible for their own decisions, regardless, and their own choices.
I mean,
they
you
still
really
own
think
themselves.
So?
They still. Yeah. I think that it can be taken from you, but I don't think it can be ceded.
How can it be taken from you
coercion.
But not be ceded?
Because if it's ceded, it's voluntary, which means you're still acting as an individual.
Well, that decision might be voluntary, but the rest of it doesn't have to be once you've ceded your individuality. If you're just following an order, if you're just an order follower, then there's no individuality there. You're doing it because your group leader told you to.
But that's acting as an individual choosing to follow the group leader, as opposed to being under coercion and making choices because of the threat of violence. But just choosing to be an order follower is an active and ongoing choice that the individual makes voluntarily as an individual.
Sometimes.
It has to be. How would it be different?
Well, first off, mental illness, that's definitely something that one can take advantage of. Second off, you can create a mental illness in the form of cult programming and or collectivist groupthink kind of, you know, newspeak kind of bullshit. You know, there are many ways to change somebody's mind from being individualistic to being collectivistic. And
in that case, is the individual still responsible for their actions, or is just the leader or the collective?
I would say that the group becomes responsible, and anybody in the group becomes the target, becomes a valid target. Because if you're a member of a group that is openly attacking people, expect to be attacked back. It's sort of like if I see a bunch of people wearing a certain color, I'm not going to, like, in the same area, walking the same direction, I'm not going to stop and think, well, gee, those people might be separate. It's a reasonable assumption to assume that they're together and that any action one of them takes is taken on behalf of some sort of group dynamic. You know, at least I can't see a logical way out of that. So, you know, to me, it's that they've ceded their individuality because they're not acting as an individual. They're acting as a member of a group. And if the group says something, it doesn't matter how much they disagree, they still have to do it. So if the person is just hitting me because you told them to, that seems to me to be another instance of them acting as a part of that group.
Yeah, I feel like we might be at the point of talking in circles here. Sorry if we're getting too bogged down in the weeds of this, but I am interested in this discussion. I think only individuals act, and individuals might act as a part of a group, but it's only groups don't act. Only people do. Real flesh and blood, individual people. And they might act in an organized fashion, and they might act in a way where they are doing what a leader says, but it's still each unit that is doing the acting out of their own choices, even if those choices come from various forms of brainwashing, they're still making the decision and still should be held accountable, not just at, not as a member of a group, but as an individual actor.
Well, who brainwashed them?
Who? I don't know. Could be lots of different people.
Right. So those people are acting as the mechanism by which the group gains its operators. So, you know, those people are getting orders from another person, probably some sort of unit commander. That unit commander gets their orders from some sort of head organization. That head organization gets their orders from some sort of leading body, and that leading body gets its orders from some sort of leader. And if you break that down and you take out most of those organizations and you just say leader, order follower, because that order follower is not acting in their personal necessarily interests, but acting because the leader told them to do something, then that person is acting as an extension of the leader, and his, you know, their individuality isn't something that the leader cares about, and it's not something that they care about, so it's something that you can ignore. I don't see why that's why that wouldn't be a thing.
Because they do care about their individuality.
Maybe.
I mean, they're at least making they're still making choices as an individual, I would say. That doesn't work for me as a justification. Here, let me throw one at you. The person who is giving out the orders is an accomplice to the hitting. Like, if I'm giving out the orders, I am participating with the person punching you. It's in a more indirect sense, but by putting that idea into their head and by in a sense making a plan together, which is essentially what that is, the plan is just happens to be mine, it to punch you in the face, it is I am an accomplice to the act, and thus I share in the guilt.
Right.
Does that make sense as a, you know, sort of a legal justification of defensive force in the form of seeking restitution from me?
Well, right. Of course, I don't agree with the idea of defensive force. I think that any force is acceptable once the person has, you know, violated your rightly held boundaries. I don't think there is any proportional and or defensive force that could be really measured. But other than that, yeah, I mean.
Oh, well, I would call once your rights have been violated, then using force to seek restitution is something that I would call defensive force.
Okay.
Even though, you know, what you're actually doing might look like aggression, but what you're really doing is getting back, you know, what you are owed. You know, it's a little different in terms of how we would frame it, but it's like taking money back from a thief. You know, that's just defending yourself from a theft. Whether you get money back from a thief right as he's taking the wallet out of your pocket or 5 years later, it's still fundamentally the same sort of action.
Right. And whether or not, you know, because to me, I've always boiled down every potential crime to theft, because when it comes down to it, they're just stealing time from you in one way or another.
Yeah.
You know, time that you'll never get back.
Yeah. I think that to me is this is a little bit of an aside. I think we've covered that issue adequately enough and then we'll get out of here. But like, that's one of the things that I will say sort of strikes my heart, if you will. It hits my emotions, like that a taxation, it really is just taking someone's life from them. You're saying this time, which, you know, this not just time, but all the energy expenditure and work and brain power it took to create this, it is really your life itself that is the right product of your labor. That is what you earn. Your life itself is what's being taken under threat of force.
It's a great tragedy.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you get a tax return, it's still only after you've done what was required to get it. Oftentimes that being living under really shitty circumstances so that you don't rise above the bracket that would require you to pay that in the first place.
Yeah. Or, and you still have to spend time filling out the paperwork to get the tax return, which is also just your life
right.
taken from you.
And of course, it's all to justify a system that's just going to take more from you in its daily dealings anyway, like the highway patrol system, which is highway robbers, and the code enforcement things, which will put a stop work order on your house if you're working on it in a way that they don't approve of, and things like that. You know, all these things where these fundamentally wicked people are telling you that you need to act a certain way because otherwise society will collapse. Society is built on the backs of people who have been stolen from for the past, you know, several millennia. And to say that the people who've been responsible are somehow keeping it all together, to me, is so fucking naive.
Yeah. All right, let's get out of here, dude. I see there's a bunch going on in the chat. I'll probably stick around for a few minutes and just see if there's anything to respond to in the chat. So if you're watching this live, don't go anywhere. If you're interested in a response, you want to plug anything?
Moment of Rage with Jeremiah Harding. I sell shirts and shit. You can find that in my Twitter bio. I'm Insanity is Free.
All right, cool. At Jeremiah JM on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Also, I'm selling stuff on Craigslist. So if you're in the Chippewa Valley area in Wisconsin, please, you know, I've got an electric can opener I would love to get rid of. Only $5. All right. Thanks, y'all. Peace.